Captain Corelli's Mandolin by Louis de Bernier. Dramatized by Katie Hymns. Looking for snails.
A boof!
Excuse me, children.
Kalispera, Iatre.
Lemony, do you remember when you found Psipsina and you made me come and rescue her?
Yes.
Are there still lots of snails there?
Yes, there are hundreds.
When is the best time to find them?
After dark is best.
After dark, there's a curfew.
Before dark, then.
Very good. Thanks to you, Captain, there is almost no food. Even our goat is getting skinny.
The blockade is British, Iatre.
Yeah, and the occupation is Italian.
I do my best to help.
Well, this evening you can come and help us find snails.
So it was that an hour before the setting of the sun, Dr. Yanis, Captain Corelli, Pelagia and Lemony found themselves crawling through an impossible tangle of animal runs and briars and harvesting the legions of fat snails.
Look at this one. It's got red speckles and black dots.
Ooh, let me see. Oh, yes, that is a good one.
The child and the three adults became so absorbed in their task that they did not notice themselves becoming separated. At some point, the captain found himself alone and reflected that he could not remember having felt so contented. In the distance, an anti-aircraft gun cracked.
Pelagia!
What are you doing?
Stuck.
Stuck?
A thorn scraped my cheek and I can't untangle my hair.
I'm not laughing. I thought you were wounded.
I am wounded. Untangle me and stop laughing. I'm squashing my nose.
You're in a very vulnerable position. Just try to appear grateful.
You shouldn't have done that.
I couldn't help it.
It was taking advantage.
I'm sorry. What's the matter?
I can't stand it anymore. Not any of it.
It's true. Everything is so lousy.
I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry.
The captain took her head in his hands, and suddenly they found themselves enclosed in their first unpatriotic and secret kiss. The next day, Pelagia set about the task of preparing the snails. Drusilla had plenty of advice.
What you've got to do is leave the snails overnight in a pot full of water with the lid on to prevent escape, and in the morning you have to wash them thoroughly. Then you heat them alive in water and wait for the froth and scum to appear on the surface. After 15 minutes, you have to pierce a hole in the back of each shell to let the devil out.
Kokolios's wife had other ideas, and Stamatis's wife had other ideas all over again. Pelagia felt like throwing the snails onto the floor and stamping on them.
Mr. Corelli!
Pelagia, glad of a distraction, went out into the yard where Carlo and the captain were smoking cigarettes.
Mr. Corelli!
Si, bellissima!
I saw a great big spiky rust ball, and I climbed all over it.
What did she say?
She says she saw a great big spiky rust ball, and she climbed all over it.
She's found a mine.
Ask her if it was on the beach.
Corizimo, was it on the beach?
No.
Corelli knew enough Greek to know the word yes, and he stood up suddenly.
Putana, she could have been killed.
It's a miracle she wasn't.
Andiamo, Carlo. Sbrigati.
It was a sphere the height of a man, studded with blunt spikes that made it look like an unnaturally gigantic horse chestnut.
We'll have to cordon it off and explode it.
This should be good.
Carlo, go back to base and get some dynamite, a command wire, and one of those electrical plunger things. I'll stay here and get the villagers organized.
Certo.
When the time comes, I want you all to go back to the top of the cliff and watch from there.
Whilst we're waiting for the dynamite, I need some strong men with spades to dig me a trench. It has to be about the same size as a grave. Any volunteers? Any volunteers?
Everyone wanted to see the big bang, but no one wanted to be seen helping an Italian. Only when Cocolius and Stamatis had negotiated payment of 2 chickens each did they agree to dig the trench. Carlo returned, not only with the dynamite and the other equipment, but with an entire truckload of troops, all of them eager to witness the forthcoming spectacle.
Why didn't you invite Hitler too?
They made me bring all these men. Apparently it's against regulations to transport explosives without an escort.
This hole is in the wrong place, Captain.
Who are you?
An engineer.
The hole is fine.
No, it's too close. The shockwave will pass straight over this hole and suck your eyes and brains out, and then we'll have to dig you out too.
Listen, Corporal, let me point out that I am a captain and you are not. I am the one in charge here.
And let me point out to you that I know what I'm talking about. I'm a highly trained sapper, and you are a mad bastardo.
Stai zitto! I'm putting you on a charge of insubordination.
A dead man cannot press charges, sir. If you really want to die, okay then, I'll watch.
Corelli placed a charge of dynamite beneath the mine and unreeled the command wire, which was just long enough to reach the trench.
Carlo.
Yes, Captain.
What if he's right?
Who?
That imbecile of an engineer.
I don't know.
Let's build a wall of sand about the mine so that most of the blast goes upwards.
Sì, certo.
Allontanatevi da qui!
The spectators wound their way back up the slopes of the cliff. Down in his ditch, Corelli raised his eyes to heaven, crossed himself, and smartly thrust the plunger down. Everyone on the cliff saw a vast column of debris ascend up into the sky. Revolving plates of steel, water glistening with momentary rainbows, sloppy clods of wet sand, powder storms of dry sand, billowing black smoke and orange flames. Quite suddenly, the shockwave swept upon them and bowled them flat on their backs. A dark cloud spread above their heads, and then huge amounts of wet sand came hurtling down on them. A white-hot shard of metal shot into the soil next to Pelagia's head. Burning motes of rust settled upon her clothes, and she wondered if they were all going to die. Eventually it ended, and a gentle rain of dry sand drifted out of the sky. The people slowly began to stand up. It was a carnival of weakened knees and tattered clothing. No one could recognize anybody else, and Italian and Greek peered into one another's faces, denationalized by grime. And then someone spotted the corpse of the smug engineer.
It's the engineer.
His head lay neatly severed and smiling from the rest of his body, guillotined by a disc of rusty and jagged steel.
He died happy. You can't ask for more than that.
Pelagia recognized his voice as that of Carlo.
Carlo!
What?
Where is the captain?
Captain! Captain Corelli!
Corelli was indistinguishable from the wet sand. Floundering and failing to sit up, he looked like a monster from a film.
Antonio! Are you hurt?
Was it good? I missed it.
It was a real sporacaccione of an explosion. Absolutely better than anything I've ever seen.
I can't hear you. In fact, I can't hear anything.
Corelli was deaf for 2 days and was afraid that he would lose his music forever. He was put on a charge by General Gandin because of the death of the engineer and for acting on his own initiative without permission, for not handing over responsibility to the qualified authority, for reckless endangerment, and for conduct unbecoming to an officer.
Pelagia! Pelagia, ma che hai? Whatever is the matter?
They've taken my goat! My beautiful goat!
Oh, Pelagia. I am so sorry.
Lo siete tutti bastardi. Thieves and bastardi.
Tesoro mio, I swear on my mother's life I will find you another goat.
Don't! I wouldn't accept it, even if you did.
Corelli had every intention of finding her a goat, but first he would find her a motorbike.
Where did you get that from?
Gunther Weber.
Gunther Weber has given you a motorbike.
In exchange for some Parma ham and a bottle of Chianti. Vuol fare un giro?
I don't think so.
Pelagia.
I've never been on one and I'm not starting now.
Corizimo.
It's only got two wheels. It's bound to fall over.
But it won't. That's the strangest thing. It doesn't always go in a straight line, but I'm getting the hang of it.
Somebody might see us.
Va bene. Tomorrow I'll bring you a helmet and goggles and a big leather coat. And then you won't be recognised. Is that a deal?
No.
But the next day, they met round the bend of the road, and Pelagia hurriedly put on her disguise. The captain found it almost impossible to control with the extra weight, and twice they fell off. But after they arrived at the harbour of Fiscardo and Pelagia had clambered off shaking, she said to him,
You were right, Antonio.
Really?
It is glorious to ride a motorcycle.
They went to places where Pelagia could not have been known, and to places that were deserted. They discovered a ruined shepherd's hut, so old that the floor had sunk into the earth.
What do you think?
It's nice.
It's no palace.
It's perfect.
They became lovers in the old-fashioned sense. He loved her too much to jeopardize her happiness, and she in turn had too much sense to throw caution to the wind.
Alma del cuore, spirito dell'alma, sempre constante t'adorerò, t'adorerò, t'adorerò. Sempre constante t'adorerò.
After the war.
After the war.
After the war, when we are married, shall we live in Italy? My father thinks I wouldn't like it, but I'm sure that I would as long as I'm with you.
After the war, if we have a girl, I want to call her Lemoni.
After the war, if we have a son, we've got to call him Yanis. I'll speak to the children in Greek, and you can speak to them in Italian.
After the war, I'm going to write a concerto and dedicate it to you.
After the war, I'm going to train to be a doctor, and I don't care if they don't let women in. I'm still going to do it.
After the war, I'll get a mandola so that I can play viola music.
After the war, I'll love you forever.
Dona non vidi mai.
A few days later, at the summit of Mount Enos, Alekos the goat herder rose from his bed at dawn. When the planes flew overhead, Alekos did not pay very much attention, but on this particular morning, he noticed something unusual. A sort of white mushroom was drifting down with what looked like a tiny man suspended underneath. Alekos watched it with fascination and wondered if this was an angel. When the angel hit the ground, it fell over sideways, cracked its head on a rock, and was dragged along the mountainside.
Hello? Hello? Are you an angel? What are you, please?
The angel opened its eyes for one moment and said,
Oh, Otto.
Then it closed its eyes again.
Are you dead? Or are you asleep?
For 2 days, Alekos fed his heavenly visitor on honey and yogurt and was delighted when it began to sit up, rub its head, and talk. The only problem was that Alekos could not understand very much that the angel said. The most intriguing thing about the angel was that when it wanted to speak to God, it fiddled about with a metal box and made lots of interesting whines and hisses and crackles.
Wittgenstein has lost the plot.
After 4 days, the angel showed clear signs of wanting to leave. Alekos knew only one person who might have a chance of understanding angel speech. It was 3 o'clock in the morning when Dr. Yanis was woken by a gentle tapping on his window. When he rolled out of bed, he saw Alekos, which was surprising enough, and a very tall, fair-haired man in complete mainland festival dress, the Fustanella of Evzone.
I've brought you an angel.
An angel?
He fell from the sky.
Oh? Why did you bring him to me?
I knew you'd know what to do.
Where are you going?
I have to get back to my goats. Panios.
Dr. Yanis.
Sire, of your gentillesse, by the leave of Yao, will I spake in privity of certain thing?
What?
When Pelagia woke up, she was startled to see her father trying to communicate with a man dressed in a tasseled cap, a white kilt, an embroidered waistcoat and slippers with pom-poms.
Who's this?
Greetings, fair maiden.
How do I know? Alekos said he was an angel and then ran off. He talks Greek like a Spanish cow.
Praise I well thy fresh beauty and age tender, I trow.
What language is he speaking?
I've no idea.
Could it be Bulgarian?
Greek of the olde days.
Ancient Greek.
You're English.
Yes.
Please, we speak English.
Oh, that would be marvellous.
The Englishman had no idea his finest public school Greek would be entirely incomprehensible. It was also becoming clear that someone in intelligence had the wrong idea of what was worn in Kefalonia.
We are having an Italian officer sleeping in a room. So we are being very quiet, please.
Righto. Do you have any clothes I could borrow?
Clothes? I bring you clothes. You give me for the Fustanella, righto?
Righto.
The doctor had always wanted a Fustanella, but he had never been able to afford one. The Englishman departed for Argostoli at dawn, the turn-ups of the doctor's trousers half up his pink calves, and the jacket unfastenable.
Thank thee for thine goodness.
Your accent is terrible. Terrible. Not to talk. Right? You are quiet until you learn. Also, watch out for the Andartes. They are thieves. They say they're communists, but they are thieves. Italians, good. Germans, not good.
With his body belt full of gold sovereigns, Lieutenant Bunny Warren covered Kefalonia on foot, memorizing everything. Every week, via his radio, he reported in great detail to Cairo, informing them of troop movements and numbers. Wherever he went, he feigned madness, because this was the best disguise. And sometimes he would join up with the conveniently peripatetic Father Arsenios and hope to pass for another prophetic religious fanatic.
Because the island of Kefalonia is a jewel, it has, since the time of Odysseus, been the plaything of the great, the powerful, the plutocratic, and the odious. From the time of the Romans, the only prize for us was survival.
The doctor paused. It was the same old problem. He was writing not so much a history as a lament.
Pelagia!
Yes?
I want to talk to you.
What is it, Babaka?
Sit down. It has not escaped my notice that you have fallen in love with the captain.
Babacar!
No, really, this point is not worth denying or discussing, because it's all very obvious. Diagnosis has been made and confirmed, and we should be discussing the implications. By the way, it is clear to me that he is also in love with you.
Babacar, please.
It's not that I don't like the captain. In fact, I like him very much. But you must remember that you are betrothed to Mandras. You do remember that?
Yes.
And technically the captain is an enemy, is he not?
Yes.
Can you conceive the torment that would be inflicted upon you when they judge that you have renounced the love of a patriotic Greek in favour of an oppressor? I'm not telling you to be ashamed, but imagine if you got pregnant.
Baba!
No, stop pretending to be shocked. Who knows what one might do in a moment of passion?
Oh.
What do you think would happen, Many such women end up as prostitutes because they suddenly find they have no way to keep body and soul together.
Please stop saying these things.
Of course. I would never abandon you as long as I lived. But imagine if I should die.
The captain has never, ever tried to compromise me.
He's a good man. He knows he's in a bad position. Pray for the liberation of the island, because then everything is possible. And Pelagia.
Yes?
Don't let anything I have said diminish you. I did not intend to upset you. Only to warn you not to make a mistake.
In the courtyard of the doctor's house, Kokolios, Stamatis, their wives, Pelagia and Dr. Yanis were serenaded by Marlene Dietrich, the boys of La Scala, and Corelli on the mandolin. The German Lieutenant Gunther Weber was also present. He had lent both his voice and his gramophone to the boys of La Scala. Pelagia stroked the polished wood of the wonderful gramophone.
Please, play that again. It was so beautiful.
Do you like the gramophone?
Of course. It's lovely.
When the war has ended, when I go home, I will leave it with you.
Do you mean it?
Of course I mean it.
Oh, thank you, Gunther.
The following day, Dr. Yanis was fixing his pipe and Corelli was fixing his mandolin.
It's impossible to find new strings now, and my last spare is gone.
Now, what about surgical wire? Would that work?
If it's too thick, you have to tighten the string beyond the capacity of the instrument. And if it's too thin, then it's too slack to have a decent tone, and it rattles on the frets.
Oh. Are you and Pelagia planning to be married? As a father, I think I have the right to know.
When the war is over, we would like to marry, yes.
You'd have to live here, that's all. If she went to Italy, she would die of homesickness. I know my daughter. You know, we've had nothing but slaughter on this island for 2,000 years. Sacrifices, wars, murders, nothing but bad deaths. We've had massacres at Sami, Viscardo, and God knows where else. And there'll be more. It's only a question of time. So don't go making any plans.
The Allies invaded Sicily for strategic reasons, and in doing so, they betrayed their most long-standing and gallant ally, Greece. The angry Greeks heard from the BBC all about the destruction of fascism in Italy and demanded to know why they had been ignored. In Britain and America, no one would believe that the communists in Greece were committing atrocities on an unimaginable scale. On Kefalonia, the Italian soldiers listened to their radios and charted the course of Allied progress in their homeland.
What happens when we have to surrender before the Germans do?
We'll get married.
It's going to be a complete mess. There's no chance of the British coming. No one will save us unless we save ourselves. All the boys think we should disarm the Germans now, while their garrison is so small. We've sent deputations to General Gandin, but he says we should trust them.
At this moment, Father Arsenios passed by, accompanied by Bunny Warren. both of them battered, tattered, and dusty.
Good afternoon, Father Arsenios.
Yashu pedim.
Bunio, when are the British coming? I've got to know. What's going to happen to the Italians when they surrender?
That I cannot tell, for I know it not myself, and neither doth any man.
Your Greek is getting a lot better.
Oh, thank you.
Have the Germans brought in any more soldiers?
Nay, I think not.
Thank you.
Not at all.
Take care, Bunios. Don't worry. Everything will be all right.
Are you serious? You go and ask the opinion of a religious madman, and you expect me to believe it?
I wasn't asking the priest. I got it from the other one.
Who is the other one?
Do you remember how fat the priest used to be?
At this point, Pelagia thought it wiser to change the subject. Father Arsenios was in fact saved by the war. His agonies of self-revulsion fell away, his greed and indolence, his alcoholic excesses fell behind him, and it was as if he had grown taller. He discovered within himself the gift of prophecy. He set out on foot, laden with nothing but an olive wood cross that would serve him as a staff. From the lentisk bushes and the cypresses of the north to the shingle sands of Scala in the south, Arsenios trudged and sermonized. The Italian soldiers provided Arsenios and his dog with bread and water and scraps and olives, and in monasteries he was cared for by nuns and monks. But the hard nights in caves and the meagre diet, the 2 years' relentless tramping, caused his ample flesh to fall away until his vast black robes flapped about his body. For the first time in his life, he found peace and was happy with himself.
And burning with brimstone!
At the beginning of August, the Germans landed many more troops on the island of Cephalonia. For the next month, they prepared for war with the Italians, while the Italian general Gandin refused to order counter-preparations. Gandin did not believe that the Germans would attack, because he could not believe they would be so dishonorable.
Why doesn't he order us to be ready?
Because he trusts the Germans, Carlo.
He's an idiot.
Yes.
On the 3rd of September 1943, Marshal Badoglio signed a secret armistice with the Allies. It was September the 8th when Carlo was listening to the radio, trying to find a signal.
Marshal Badoglio of the Italian Army has ordered that all aggressive acts by Italian armed forces against the forces of the British and the Americans will cease at once everywhere. They must be prepared to repel attacks from any other quarter.
Outside, the bells of the island began to ring with the impossible hope of peace. The ringing spread to Argostoli, Ligzuri, Solari, Dorizata, Assos.
General Eisenhower himself has said that all Italians who now act to help eject the German aggressor from Italian soil will have the assistance and support of the Allies. Prime Minister Churchill has confirmed his support...
Antonio! Antonio, it's all over, and the Allies have promised to help us. It's over!
Oh, Carlo! Carlo!
Bravissimo!
Put me down! Calmati! The Allies don't care about us! Oh, Dio! Oh, merda, Carlo! You don't know your own strength! You have killed me!
They'll help us. You'll see.
Oh, Carlo. We've got to help ourselves. If we don't act now, it'll be too late.
That night, the Italian warships in the harbours of the island slipped anchor and fled for home. They did not tell anyone they were going, and they did not take with them a single evacuee. Corelli waited at the telephone for orders, and when none came, he fell asleep and dreamed about Pelagia.
Si, pronto, Captain Corelli.
This is a message from General Gandin's office.
Yes?
The General says you are to stay calm and not attack.
What?
Do not attack. I repeat, do not attack.
I, Carlo Piero Guercio, am so full of rage I can hardly speak. The Germans are flying in reinforcements and they have gone to General Gandin to demand that we surrender. and Gandin does nothing except consult with his senior officers. Isn't he a general? Isn't it for him to decide and to act quickly? Doesn't he listen to the radio? Is he the only one who doesn't know that the Germans are looting and slaughtering Italy? Hasn't the government ordered us to take the Germans and disarm them? Why does Gandin ignore the will of the Prime Minister and the King?
Dottore, Pelagia, I have something important to ask.
What is it?
Will you look after my mandolin?
We have the perfect place for it. Pelagia.
Here.
What are you doing?
This hole is where political refugees used to hide. When the British were here.
Carlo has already left his writings with us.
His writings?
Mm-hmm.
A big stack of papers like a novel.
I didn't know Carlo was a writer.
Well, we are not to read any of his work, unless he is dead.
Babacar.
What's the matter? It's what he said.
Lieutenant Gunther Weber dozed intermittently in his chair, also awaiting orders. He felt abysmally tired, and all his confidence had gone. He missed his Italian friends, and he missed the certainties that he had derived from so much past success. The master race was losing in Italy and Yugoslavia, the Russian front was collapsing, and Hamburg was destroyed. It was well known that the colonel had delivered a final ultimatum to General Gandin. General Gandin had asked for written guarantees of the safety of his men.
Captain.
Si, Carlo.
Tell me we're not going to go quietly.
We're not going to go quietly.
What about Gandin?
If we have to, we'll arrest him.
Excellent.
Carlo.
Si?
I want to thank you.
What for?
For your friendship. I can't think of a better, braver man to fight beside.
Captain Corelli's division voted to resist the Germans, but had no time to set in place an effective leadership to coordinate its actions.
Antonio, my captain, we find ourselves in bad times, and I have the strongest feeling that I shall not survive them. You will find with this letter all my writings. If you read them, you will discover what kind of man I am. I hope you are not disgusted, and I hope that you will be able to forgive me and remember me without contempt. My dear Antonio, I want you to know that in return for your inextinguishable laughter, your music, your incomparable spirit, I have loved you with the same surprise and gratitude that I see in your eyes when you are with Pelagia. If a dead man may have a wish, it is that you should find your future with Pelagia. I wish you will have children together, and I wish that once or twice you will tell them about their Uncle Carlo. Antonio, I came to this beautiful island with nothing but a grey fog in my mind and an aching heart. You took away my sorrow and made me smile. Please remember me. I shall remember you even when I am dead. Carlo.
When the German fighter planes arrived early one afternoon, tipped their wings, banked in formation, and howled vertically down upon the Italian batteries, it was almost a relief. Now everything was clear. It was at last obvious that the Germans were perfidious, that every soldier would have to fight for his life. Gunther Weber knew he would have to turn his weapons on his friends. Corelli knew that his musician's fingers must now tighten round the trigger of a gun. General Gandin knew, too late, that in his radical indecision, he had condemned his men to die. And Pelagia knew that the war that had always really been somewhere else was now about to settle upon her home and blast its stones to dust.
But we haven't seen him for days.
That doesn't mean anything.
I know he's dead. I know it, Baba.
If he was dead, someone would have told us. Someone from La Scala. They were all nice boys. They would think to let us know.
Were? Were?
You think they're all dead, don't you?
No, I didn't mean that.
It was on the morning of September the 22nd that Captain Corelli of the 33rd Regiment of Artillery, knowing that the white banner was about to be raised over the HQ at Argostoli, having had no sleep for 3 days, climbed on his motorcycle and sped to see Pelagia.
Siamo perduti. We have run out of ammunition and the British have betrayed us.
You can stay here. You can hide in the house, in the hole in the floor, along with your mandolin and Carlos' papers.
No!
You can! You can! I can look after you. You'll be safe here.
Corizzimo, there has been no honour in this war, but I have to be with the boys.
No!
See!
I'll wait for you. I'll wait for you to come back.
Pelagia, I am going to die.
But you have to try to live, Antonio. Try to live for me and for our children and for our children's children.
All right.
Promise?
I promise.
Antonio.
Remember me to your father. I thank God I lived long enough to love you.
Lieutenant Weber, what can I do for you?
Major, I must request that this mission be assigned to someone else. I cannot, in all conscience, carry it out.
Why ever not?
It is against the Geneva Convention to murder prisoners of war. It is also wrong.
They're not prisoners of war. They're traitors. They've turned against their own legitimate government and they've turned against us, their allies, by legally constituted treaty. To execute traitors is not against the Geneva Convention, as you well know.
With respect, the Italian government may be established or repealed by the King, Her Major. The King has established Badoglio in government, and Badoglio has declared war. The Acqui Division are prisoners of war, and therefore we cannot execute
them. For God's sake, Lieutenant, don't you think they are traitors?
Yes, Her Major. But what I think and the legal position are not the same thing. I believe it is against the military code for a senior officer to command a junior officer to perform an illegal act. I am not a criminal, and I do not wish to become one.
I like you, Gunther, and I admire your integrity. But I must remind you that the penalty for refusing to obey an order is execution by firing squad. These Italian traitors are all going to be shot anyway, whether you do it or not. Why add your own death to theirs?
I request that my protest be put in my file, Herr Major.
Your request is granted, Gunther, but you must do as you are ordered. Heil Hitler.
Heil Hitler.
Cantiamo! Let's sing, boys! Carlo.
Yes, Captain.
Let's sing.
Ave Maria, gratia plena.
Pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death.
When the truck arrived, Gunther Weber's knees began to buckle. He had not expected his friends to be singing, humming the very tune that he and La Scala had sung together at the doctor's house. He had not expected them to jump so lightly from the truck.
Gunther,
Antonio. Cigarette?
Your hands are trembling.
Cigarette, Carlo?
No, thanks.
You sure?
A doctor told me smoking is bad for the health.
Antonio, I am very sorry. I tried to do what I could.
I'm sure you did, Günther. I know how it goes. Well, I'll say this.
What?
You lot always did get the best tobacco.
Forgive me.
You will never be forgiven.
I forgive you, Günther.
Why, Antonio?
If I do not, then who will? Goodbye, Günther.
Goodbye, Captain.
Corelli shook Günther's hand briefly and then released it. He linked an arm with Carlo and smiled up at him.
My legs are shaking.
Mine too.
Really?
Of course.
Come on, Carlo. We have been companions in life. Let us go together to paradise.
Corelli thought about Pelagia, and a succession of images came to him. Pelagia chopping onions and wiping tears from her eyes and then smiling. Pelagia combing Psipsina. Pelagia striking him when her goat was stolen. Pelagia being delighted that first time he had played Pelagia's march. Pelagia kissing Günther Weber on the cheek at the offer of the gramophone.
Herr Lieutenant, we can't delay.
Very well.
The victims were not lined up against the wall, or blindfolded, or faced away, or faced forward. Many were on their knees, praying or weeping. Some stood, smoking as if they were at a party. Carlo stood next to Corelli and resolved to die a soldier's death. Corelli breathed deeply the Cephalonian air that held Pelagia's breath.
Fire!
What no one saw, not even Weber, was that at the order to fire, Carlo had stepped smartly sideways like a soldier forming ranks. Antonio Corelli found in front of him the titanic bulk of Carlo Guercio, his wrists painfully gripped and himself unable to move. Carlo stood unbroken as one bullet after another burrowed into his chest. When his lungs filled up with blood, he held his breath and counted.
Uno. Due. Tre.
He reached 30 and then looked up at the sky. A bullet caved the jawbone of his face and flung him backwards. Corelli lay beneath him, paralyzed by his weight, drenched utterly in his blood, stupefied by an act of love so incomprehensible and so filled with divine madness.
In Captain Corelli's Mandolin by Louis de Bernier, dramatized by Katie Himes, Pelagia was played by Celia Mayras, Captain Corelli by Daniel Philpott, Dr. Yanis by Stephen Greif, Carlo by Anthony Pasela, Mandras by Chris Pavlo, and the narrator was Tom Goodman Hill. Drasula was played by Anna Sava, Belisarios by Alexi K. Campbell, Father Arsenios by Alex Zorbas, Lemony by Anya Gordon, Bunny by Jonathan Keeble, Günther Weber by John Dougal, Alekos by Sam Dale, and The Major by Simon Treves. Original mandolin music was composed and played by Alison Stevens, and the songs of La Scala were sung by the BBC singers. The director was David Hunter.